Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, this is Bruce Norris. Thank you for joining us. It's our pleasure today to be joined with Tommy Williams. Tommy is been involved in the auction business for 40 years. He's the president and founder of Williams & Williams Auction Company, and he's the president also of the National Auctioneers Association. Tommy, we welcome you to our show.
Well, it's a joy to be visiting with you.
Your family's been involved in the auction business since the 1800s. Could you give us a little brief history of how you got started in that?
Really, there's a little bit of disconnect as you travel through that period of time. My grandfather on my maternal side was in the auction business as a ringman. That would have been the very first auctioneer in the family. Passed away very early in my life, so I actually wasn't involved in any way with the auction business from him. And then my father on my paternal side was an auctioneer for several years, but I actually didn't grow up with my father. So even though we had auctioneers in the family, it was a disconnect as we journeyed along. So the auction business as we know it today, from the Williams & Williams standpoint, my wife and I started in 1963 in Illinois, and then our son came in. In fact, our son is actually the president of the company now. He joined me in 1985 after he graduated from college, and he took over running the company approximately 3 years ago. So the company as we would know it today really started in 1963 by Trudy and I.
I was just curious, since it's sort of been in the family history, did Dean ever contemplate another career path?
Well, yes, he did. Dean is an attorney.
Okay.
In fact, Dean was going to law school. There was a transition in our company. Trudy and I started in the auction business in 63 in the state of Illinois, in a rural community, West Central Illinois, and built a very successful business there with another couple, Jack and Sherry Louderman, who have become lifelong friends. And it would have been a typical, what you would call, rural auction business, but focused on real estate from the beginning, as in that part of the country, most of the time when you sold a farm, you did sell it at auction. And then we decided we wanted to take it to a, you know, basically a big city or a metro environment. And Trudy and I moved to Tulsa, Oklahoma in 1985. And at that point, we didn't have any idea that Dean would be involved in any way. Dean was in law school at the time, and he came home for that first Thanksgiving and was visiting with us at Thanksgiving dinner and said, "Dad, do you want a partner?" And as they say, I guess the rest of it's history.
Yeah, it's grown a lot since then.
Yes, it has.
It must be really a challenge. We've conducted a local auction with, I think, 16 houses. It was the hardest I've ever worked for 45 days. And you do it in multiple locations constantly all over the country. That must require a tremendous coordination and a huge amount of people that you trust.
It does. There are two pieces to the puzzle is the way I see it. You have the what we would call the regular employees, and right now that number is something in the neighborhood of 140-plus. Of course, we are based in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and these are the people that coordinate everything to make it happen, put the marketing in place, and take care of the closings after the fact. And then you hook that particular group of what I call regular employees up with contract auctioneers and ringmen that make up the different auction teams that we send throughout the country. And they're all independent contractors, but currently we have anywhere from on a given month, there'll be from 8 to 10 teams all operating at some place in the United States going from location. We try to sell most of our houses what we call on the front yard. And, you know, the exception to that, let's say we had 5 homes to sell in Pittsburgh and they were all located relatively close together. Then we might sell all 4 houses from one location in Pittsburgh. But then if there was, let's say the next house was 45 minutes away, we'd actually drive to the front yard of that house. And it's just an ongoing, the auction team starts out like on a Monday and usually finishes up at the end of the week on a Friday or Saturday, that particular team. And they might start in Pittsburgh and they might finish in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Now, most of the competitors that have, let's say, sizable auction companies, a lot of them do it in ballrooms, some of them going online. How did you evolve to doing it in front of the home? I guess that's where you started. Do you see that continuing, that'll probably be still your preferred method?
Yes. I mean, we have the statistics to really indicate that you can never do it quite as well as you can on the yard. Now, there are exceptions to any rule. When you're talking lower level, it's strictly investor-grade product, and we do sell some products strictly online. We do cut out a certain segment of our product, and it's strictly an online auction, but it's the online bidding where the last bid extends the bidding for, like, say, 5 minutes, and it always becomes an actual auction, but it is a static auction, no live auctioneer, and we do a certain number of homes every month like that on the lower end. But if you're really trying to sell to the end user, if the product you have really merits what I call the buyer being the person that's going to live in the house, you'll never be able to really capture the full market, in my opinion, any place but the front yard. It's the touch and the feel of it. I think if you can kind of put yourself in the place of being the buyer, if you and your wife are standing there looking at the house, it is, you know, in your mind, it's going to be your home, and you start thinking of how we're going to paint it and how we're going to do this and how we're going to do that. You never can get that feel and that emotional impact any place but right there at the house.
How do you deal with surprises that can kind of come out of left field, weather or just odd disruptions from neighbors?
Those are things, I mean, you encounter them, but you know, you find that it is never as big a deal as you think it's going to be. One of our favorite statements is people are always bringing up the weather factor. And we have the statistics to prove that, you know, my son loves to make the comment, if you think weather is a bad thing, then you need to pray for bad weather, because our records indicate the worse the weather, the better the sale. And I think there is some truth to that. I think people feel that if they've gotten out under what we would call adverse circumstances, they've met a challenge. So therefore, when they get to the auction, they're even more competitive than they would be under normal circumstances. So weather really proves to be, if anything, an advantage. Now, the other things we talk about, just a disruption, something as serious as maybe somebody literally having a heart attack in the crowd. You can have those kinds of things happen. But you always treat everybody in the fashion that you would like to be treated, and you'll find the people are very adaptable to working with you. And as long as you're straightforward, they realize that everybody's there to do the best they can, and everybody's trying to present the issue in the most truthful fashion. You'd be amazed how well the public adapts to that.
It sounds also that with experience over the years, you've really refined this to a very tight process to where you know what to expect nearly every time. Would that be true?
Very true. From the time that we arrive at the house, when I mentioned the auction team gets to the house, and if let's say the house is supposed to sell at 2:00, and we do everything we can to be very prompt. The only reason that we're late is there's been something happen. We've been delayed in traffic or something beyond our control, and we constantly work to improve our timeliness all the time. So if we actually arrive and start the sale at 2, and we would make it a point that if we'd rather be a minute early than a minute late, probably the auction is over with, and the person is being ready to sign the contract and working with the contract person at 10 or 15 minutes after 2. So for us to do an auction, give the terms, handle the auction, it's a 10 to 15-minute process.
We do a lot of statistical studies for California, so what I'm going to talk about is just California. But I expect that the quantity of homes that are going to go back to the lender will literally triple in the next, let's say, 9 months, the past 9 months. So these quantity of houses are going to explode, and Fannie Mae is one of your big accounts. Is that correct?
Well, no, Fannie Mae is really not one of our big accounts. We do some business with Fannie Mae,
okay,
but Fannie Mae has not been one of our big accounts.
Okay.
We have found that the government-backed, like Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, they are a little more difficult to do business with than the private companies, like, say, Countrywide or one of the private companies.
Okay. So, in any case, I think your quantity is going to grow exponentially. Do you think that if the quantity grew by a multiple of 3, you'd still probably conduct the auction in front of the house?
Yes, we would.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes, we. You know, that's one of the things that we're, I'd say, very much committed to. We would just, you know, we have the ability to definitely bring in more auction teams. We have a very broad base in the industry. I've spent my life in the industry, so I know many outstanding auctioneers. And so if we have to, you know, ramp up the ability to have, instead of, say, 8 teams, we had to have 16 teams, we would be able to do that.
Okay. There are several types of auctions, absolute, seller reserve, minimum reserve. What type of auction is most common at Williams & Williams?
We only do one kind.
Okay.
And with us, we always sell what we call subject to seller confirmation.
Okay.
Now, oftentimes, we actually list the property absolute. We have quite a few auctions that are listed absolute, but we never advertise them that way. With us, we always, and it's a big difference between seller confirmation and reserve. Because seller confirmation means that the seller has the right to confirm the price. And one of my favorite statements is this, that on sale day, the seller's opinion of what they will take will change more than the buyer's. So you want to try to do everything you can to get the seller just thinking about the process and has the process really spoken the truth. And you, the way that, that really plays out, you know, if that seller has been involved in watching what's gone on, our marketing press process is something over 3 weeks. And if they have, you know, and during that period of time, let's say they have noticed that, say, 75 different parties have been through the open houses, and now here you are auction day, you have 50 or 75 parties in the yard, you have very competitive bidding from a variety of very interested parties. You know, at the end of that process, let's face it, you have the value of the house. And the seller is probably understands that and realizes that that really is the value better than anybody. So the process will teach the seller that this is value.
When you're in a down market like we're at now, I would imagine those numbers are surprising some of the sellers, that it's lower than they thought. But what you said was a perfect sentence. The process spoke the truth. Are the sellers usually willing to listen to the truth?
If the seller is actually there, you have to remember our company was founded on doing business with private individuals, like selling your house, your personal home. That was the foundation of our company. And as long as you can have either the seller there or some, like, let's say you're selling for an institution, but you have somebody that is a very high-ranking officer with that institution in charge of that portfolio at the top end, they will take the price almost without exception. When the price gets turned down is when it's going through what I call the paper shuffling. And it's being sent off to somebody that knows nothing about the property that's being sold other than the file that somebody handed to them. They haven't seen the property. They know nothing about it. They only know the different bits of information that they've been given in that file, which unfortunately have proved to be extremely inaccurate from their standpoint. In other words, they have an appraisal that, even though it was an appraisal that somebody made, it no longer holds validity. And so they're basing that on possibly, as I say, an appraisal that is invalid. Maybe they're basing it on a broker's price opinion that, once again, was maybe 6 months or a year old, and it's not valid. And so the figures that they're trying to base their decisions on are not valid factors for them to really make the what I call the wise decision. Whereas if they were actually standing there in the yard, and as I said, they see that there's 50 people here, and there are 5 people trying to buy this property in the last $10,000 or $20,000 of value. You know, it'd be pretty hard to convince yourself that you should turn that bid down.
That's true. I would say that most of the auctions that we've attended, and we're real estate investors, we try to buy properties, you know, fix them up and resell them.
Sure.
Most of the auctions that we've seen have been seller reserve auctions, and it's obvious that some of the companies that are holding the auctions are bidding on behalf of the seller to boost the price up. And I just wanted to ask you, what are the circumstances where that's an allowable practice?
Well, first off, if you're going to bid on behalf of the seller, you must announce it.
Can they announce it just in the brochure?
No. If you want to strictly adhere to the law, If you announced it in the brochure, yes, that would get you at least, we'll say, 50% down the path.
Okay.
But really, if you really wanted to do it in the most ethical fashion, and the way that most real estate laws are written, I'm talking about state licensing laws, and you do want to remember that there are some states that have licensing laws and some states that don't. So, and they're about 50-50. About half of the states, a few more than half of the states in the United States, have licensing laws. But to really do it correctly, if you're going to bid on behalf of the seller, you should announce that you're going to bid on behalf of the seller.
What's your feeling on the practice overall? To me, it seems like it does damage to the reputation of the auction business.
I would agree totally.
Okay.
I would agree totally. Now, something that our company does, and this is something that we've been doing really on my entire auction career, we have many investors that will go, in other words, proven investors, and we'll take you, Bruce. Let's say you have been to our auctions and now you have a lot of confidence in us, and obviously we have confidence in you. You've bought from us on a variety of occasions, and you would maybe look or send one of your employees out to look at five homes that we were going to sell in West Virginia. And you would call us up, you'd say, well, on these properties, I'll give $50,000, I'll give $100,000. You would give us the figure that you were prepared to bid, and then we would enter those bids for you. And that would not be on behalf of the seller, remember.
Correct.
That would be on behalf of Bruce.
Wow.
So we have quite a few investors that authorize us to buy the properties for them, and of course, if they buy them, they're the one that's going under contract right at that spot.
I didn't know that was available. So I'd be very interested in that in California. That would definitely be something I'd be interested in.
And we would definitely love for you to talk to us. That's really the way I originally built my auction career. I've been in the auction business, as we've already talked about, 45-plus years. And I found that people have, luckily, they found that, or maybe we won't say it was so much luck as I made it a point that I always treated everybody exactly the way I wanted to be treated. People had a lot of confidence in me. They knew that if they told me that they would give $100,000 for a house or a tractor or whatever it might be, I would enter their bidding into the process in a fair fashion and in an appropriate fashion. And so that has really been one of the strengths of how we build our company.
And your reputation is great out there, and I think it's important that auction companies be looked upon favorably. And to me, the companies that are practicing that are unfairly getting business away from the legitimate auction companies. So I'm pretty strongly against it myself.
Well, I would have to tell you that there are – I wish I could say otherwise, but there are certainly companies and auction practices out there that if I could stop it in the morning, I would stop it immediately, because they're doing us all a tremendous disservice, both the consumer, the seller, the auction industry. But you know, the one thing that I guess I've looked upon as we make the journey through life, I happen to be a big football fan. And you know, this year we've even had some of our favorite football teams that probably are not playing quite as ethically as we would like for them to do. So I guess auctions are not any different than any other thing that we deal with in life, but we would sure like for it to be as close to perfect as we could get it.
Well, I know, and we'll talk, this is on the next show, we'll talk about the association that you're president of, and I know that that's making every effort to trying to make the auction business more and more professional. Let's say I'm a builder who's considering an auction, but I'm worried about the stigma of having my homes auctioned off. What would be your response to a builder who's concerned about that?
I think the first thing that a builder has to face is, and well, really, I should say this is what any seller has to face, no matter whether you're a builder or who you are. You have to look at it, I am a seller, what is my goal, and what am I trying to achieve? But let's look at it as a builder. If let's say a builder has an addition and he has 10 houses in that addition and they're not sold, we all know that the longer they stay on the market unsold, the more that whole housing addition begins to deteriorate. So he has to finally measure, if he's in a deteriorating market on top of that, everything is going the wrong way for him. In other words, the longer he holds out, just the market is eroding and moving away from him. So if he was doing everything else perfect, the market would be going down anyway. So then he has to look at that and say, my goodness, you know, it went down 5% in the last 6 months, but it might go down another 5% or even more in the next 6 months. Then the other deterioration that I think is even worse, it's just the I call it the deterioration that takes place in that marketplace. The fact that there are 10 houses, all of them sitting empty, nobody taking care of them, the yards are not mowed, they're not being, as I always call it, you can tell when you drive by a home that somebody loves it and takes care of it. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite statements, because there isn't anything that shows the difference between what I call a loved home and an unloved home. And so those 10 homes that are still builder-owned, they're not loved. And that becomes very apparent with each and every day that they set on the market. So in my opinion, the builder is far better off letting the marketplace speak and just dealing with what the marketplace is. Not a lot different. In fact, it would be almost identical. If you owned, let's say, 10,000 shares of General Motors stock and the market started to drop, you have two choices. You can speculate that General Motors stock is eventually going to be worth more money and you're going to ride that out till it all turns out fine. On the other hand, if you are wrong, that would be a very bad decision. Builder faced with exactly the same decision. He could speculate that these houses are going to actually recoup enough in value to take care of the carry costs, the depreciation on the houses, all of the other factors. The insurance goes on every day. There are many, many factors that each and every day he owns those houses that are going to constantly affect his bottom line. So he can deal with the marketplace today, or he can speculate on the marketplace tomorrow. And in my opinion, he should just go ahead and do the business. And the fact that he sells the homes and they bring whatever, they bring 75% of what the homes brought a year ago, that has nothing to do with an auction. It just has to do with the marketplace, and it's just the way life is.
You know, on the opposite side of that, and this is something that's very rare, because in viewing auctions as a buyer, I haven't seen an auction in California between, let's say, 1998 and 2004, 5 or 6. But it occurred to me that in 2005, builders were building homes. They had people in line getting lottery numbers to pay full price. What would you think the results would have been had they put all those people on a lawn at the peak of a boom? Do you think that they would have gotten considerably more in an auction than they would from selling them at full price?
Absolutely.
I agree
completely. Over my career, I have actually sold properties for double what they were listed for by very reputable real estate companies. Over double.
So the market spoke...
In other words, the market speaks the truth.
Mm-hmm.
The problem we have in America today, and it's a very simple... The problem is simple to identify, and the solution is also very, very simple. Unfortunately, people don't like to deal with what I call the realities of life. And the marketplace tells you the truth. The marketplace is the marketplace. You or I are not the ones that can change it. Many, many have tried. I was referring to General Motors a moment ago. Let's face it, the big three automakers have done everything in their power to be able to say that they are the big three. They didn't want Toyota or Honda or the foreign-made automobile companies to begin to be the leading automobile manufacturers in the world, but the truth of the matter is, it is the way it is.
That's right.
So the marketplace tells you the truth. And what we seem to hate to do as a consumer, and I think maybe America more than any place else, is that we will do everything in the world to ignore the reality of what we don't like.
I would agree with that. On that note, Tommy, we have to end our first segment. What would be a website that they could look at for your company, the Williams & Williams Auction Company?
You just go to Williams. Be sure you have the S on Williams. Williams Auction, no S. AUCTION, WilliamsAuction.com.
Okay. Tommy, thanks for joining us, and we'll continue this in next week.
You bet.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.
Join Bruce Norris in April at either the Sacramento or Riverside REO Boot Camp. Learn the hands-on skills you need to attend auctions, work with REO agents, and how to properly appraise and estimate repairs in a down market. Realtors and mortgage professionals, mark your calendars for April 19th. Bruce Norris will be joined in Riverside by sales master Ben Gay III as they discuss how realtors and mortgage professionals can position themselves to benefit from the downturn by putting themselves in the way of massive business. Visit www.thenorrisgroup.com or call 951-780-5856 today for more information.